They hadn't gone even a block when a man came crashing through the bat wings of a saloon, sailed across the boardwalk in front of it, and landed in the street. He was a stocky, middle-aged man with curly brown hair. Four men emerged onto the boardwalk. One of them stepped to the edge and pulled his gun. He was medium-sized but powerfully muscled, wearing a leather vest over a faded blue shirt and gray wool pants, tucked into high-topped boots with big spurs strapped to them. A flat-crowned black hat was thumbed back on his thatch of equally black hair.
Well, we seen you fly. Now we're gonna see just how good you can jump, Peckham.
Hold it.
Who the hell are you?
Reckon that ought to be obvious. We're the law and Mankiller. Part of it, anyway. He's Deputy Morden, I'm Deputy Creel.
Well, I'm Finn Murdoch, and I don't give a damn. You old geezers run along now, and me and my friends won't teach you a lesson for interfering with our fun.
You fellas leave that hombre alone and run along now, and we won't throw you in jail for disturbing the peace.
I already got my gun in my hand, you old fool. I can kill you quicker than a blink, damn it.
You might be able to get lead in me, but you're gonna be stone cold dead before I hit the ground, and I can guarantee that.
People in the street and on the boardwalks began to scatter, sensing that bullets were going to be flying any second now. The man who had been thrown out of the saloon to start this scrambled to his feet.
Stop it! Nobody has to die over this! You and your friends can have my claim, Murdoch! I'll find another one!
So you're claim jumpers. Can't say as I'm really surprised. What is it? You let Peckham here do all the work and then you take it over and cash in on it?
None of your business, that's what it is! And you shut your damn mouth, Peckham!
Finn, are we gonna let these old mossbacks talk to us like that? Or are we gonna do something about it?
Oh, we're gonna do something about it. Right now!
The gun in his hand snapped down. Bo and Scratch were already moving, though. Bo went left, Scratch went right, and as they darted aside, their Colts leaped into their hands. Scratch took Murdoch first. At the same time, Bo lined his Colt on the closest of the other three men and fired as they clawed at their guns. His first shot drove into the target's chest and knocked the man back through the bat wings. Bo aimed and fired again, sending another man spinning off his feet. A second shot blasted out from Scratch's gun. The fourth man crumpled and sprawled just in front of the saloon's entrance. All four of the gunmen were down, but at least some of them were still alive and therefore still dangerous. The Texans moved quickly, striding forward to kick guns out of the reach of clawing fingers.
Think about it, mister. For fellas to get as old as we are, they have to be damn good or damn lucky.
Or both.
Understanding dawned in Murdoch's eyes, but that was the last emotion to register there. They widened into a glassy stare as death claimed him. The man who had fallen back through the bat wings was dead too, shot through the heart. The other two were unconscious and clearly not long for this world.
Somebody go and fetch a doctor.
I'll get him.
Bo and Scratch thumbed fresh cartridges into their guns to replace the rounds they had fired. The miner, Peckham, stared at them from the street, where he had stood transfixed during the whole shootout.
You killed all of them. Four against two. And you're not even wounded, either of you. Never saw anything like it in my life.
That sentiment was echoed by numerous bystanders in the crowd that had formed around the front of the saloon now that the shooting was over. Everybody wanted to take a gander at the bloody corpses. A man pushed his way through the press of people. Bo recognized him as Sam Bradfield, the Undertaker.
Good Lord. When you said there'd be more business for me, I didn't figure you meant this soon.
Wasn't our choice.
Those hombres called the tune. We just danced to it.
They was trying to force me to sign over my claim to them.
Is it a good one?
Well, that's just it. I found some color, but not all that much. By the time I give Devery's air share, I'm just barely making enough to keep going. I found a good-sized nugget yesterday, though, and brought it into town today. I guess Murdoch saw it and thought my claim was a lot richer than it really is. That's why I wouldn't let them have it, especially if they hadn't started roughing me up.
I've seen this bunch hanging around town for several days. I had a feeling they were up to no good. They were just waiting for a chance to swoop in on somebody, like vultures. You were unlucky enough to be the one they picked, Tobias.
I reckon so. Thing is, that claim's not really worth dying over.
That's not what they died over. They died because Deputy Morton and I stood up to them, and their pride couldn't stand that.
And you risk dying too, Deputy. You've barely pinned on those badges. You haven't even had a chance to do the job we hired you for.
This is the job you hired us for. Keeping a peace in Mankiller, no matter who threatens it. No offense, Mr. Bradfield, but if you want to hire guns just to go after the Devries, you'd best look for somebody else.
No, don't get me wrong, Deputy. Absolutely, you should keep the peace and enforce the law. I just didn't expect that there would be gunplay involved so soon.
Before we get this town cleaned up, I expect there'll be more.
When they came into the sheriff's office a short time later, after Bradfield hauled off the bodies in his wagon, the Texans found Biscuits O'Brien sitting at the desk, a puzzled frown on his face.
I thought I heard shooting a little while ago. You fellas know anything about that?
Well, a little. We had to gun down some hard cases who were attacking a citizen and trying to steal his claim.
Did you say gun down?
I'm afraid so. We gave them a chance to back off, but they weren't having any of it.
You killed them? How many were there?
4. Two of them died pretty quick, and the other two crossed the divide a few minutes later, and we sent somebody to fetch the doc, but by the time he got there, it was too late.
Oh, this is bad. This is really bad. Who was it you killed?
The leader of the bunch called himself Finn Murdoch. We never got the names of the other three, but I reckon we can try to find out.
No, that's all right. Doesn't really matter, I guess. People are going to hear about this. It's liable to cause more trouble.
It's possible. Anytime there's a gunfight, there's somebody out there who hears about it and thinks he ought to challenge the winner just to find out if he's faster.
Yeah, but there'll be other hombres who hear about it and decide that they'd better behave themselves while they're in Mankiller. Sort of evens out in the long run if you look at it that way.
What if the men you killed had friends who want to even the score for them?
We'll deal with that when and if the time comes. If you heard the shooting, Sheriff, why didn't you come and see what was going on?
Didn't figure it was any of my business. Anyway, I knew I had 2 deputies out on patrol to handle anything that happened.
Yeah, you could look at it like that.
One thing lawmen do is watch each other's back. We're not professional star packers, but we've worn law badges before and know a little bit about it. Have you ever worn a badge before, Sheriff?
Well, maybe you should be a sheriff instead of me. What was your name again?
Bo Creel.
Yeah, that's right. Bo. You're Scratch, right?
Yep.
I'll just resign, and one of you can have the job. I don't care which.
You're the duly elected sheriff. There's no reason for you to resign.
Duly elected. I don't think anybody even voted in that election except for Devries and their friends and relatives. I can't be sure about that because, well, I was drunk all day election day. And just about every day since, for that matter.
It doesn't matter who voted for you. You're the sheriff and you swore to do your duty and uphold the law.
Oh, hell, those are just words.
And words mean something. So do actions. You can still be a good sheriff. You just have to act like one.
You ain't gonna try to reform me, are you, Bo? I warn you, it's been tried before. Ask Reverend Schumacher. Hell, ask anybody in Mankiller. They'll all tell you how worthless I am.
We'll see about that.
You get yourself killed. I warn you about that right now. You go to depending on me, you're taking your life in your hands. Now, I gotta go.
You mean go and get a drink?
If I do, that's my business.
Biscuits came out from behind the desk and stumbled toward the door. Scratch moved to get in his way, but Bo shook his head.
Let him go.
Yeah, let me go. Don't waste your breath trying to save me, Scratch.
When Biscuits was gone, Scratch looked at the door that had closed behind the sheriff.
That is one sorry-ass son of a bitch.
Right now, maybe.
Oh, he's right, Bo. You can't save everybody. Some folks are too far gone, and some just flat out ain't worth it. And I reckon Sheriff Biscuits O'Brien may fall into both of them categories.
We'll see.
It was well after noon by now, and the Texans hadn't eaten since breakfast at Francis O'Hanrahan's dugout that morning. They left the office and walked over to the cafe. The lunch rush had cleared out a little, so they went to the counter and sat down on stools there. Lucinda Bonner came over to them, a slight frown on her face.
What's wrong, Mrs. Bonner?
I heard about that gunfight. You killed four men?
It seemed like the thing to do at the time, since they were trying to kill us.
Oh, I know you had to defend yourselves. I don't fault you for that. I just hate to hear about more violence, and so soon after we hired you.
You hired us to clean up the town.
Yes, of course. But Mankiller already has a reputation for being a dangerous place. I mean, even that name. I just wish there was some way to get rid of the troublemakers without having to...
Shoot them?
Well, yes.
We'll settle things peacefully with anybody who'll let us. We would have let those four gunmen a while ago walk away. It was their choice not to. I reckon you've seen enough of life on the frontier, Mrs. Bonner. Know that sometimes the only way to deal with trouble is to meet it head on.
Unfortunately, that's true. And you certainly didn't waste any time letting everyone in town know that law and order has returned. I suppose that's a good thing.
Have you thought any more about what we discussed earlier, about electing a town council and a mayor?
Yes, I spoke to Wallace Kane when he came back in for lunch, as well as Mr. Maiden and Mr. Gaines. They're all for the idea. I think we can get all the men who were here earlier for the meeting to run for town council. Except for Francis O'Hanrahan, of course. He doesn't live in the town limits. I suppose we can just pick one of them to be the mayor.
Actually, I had something else in mind. I think you ought to be mayor.
Me? But I'm a woman. I can't even vote.
Maybe not. But I don't see why that would keep folks from voting for you. You must know just about everybody in town, Mrs. Bonner. Most of them are probably eating here at one time or another. And I would think the food here would be a good incentive for them to vote for you.
Well, that's hardly a reason to elect someone mayor.
Who came up with the idea of hiring Scratch and me as deputies?
Well, Francis really thought of it, but he and I discussed it before we brought in the other businessmen.
There's proof that you're devoted to improving the town and making Mankiller a better place to live.
You're wasting your time arguing with this old varmint, ma'am. Once Bo gets an idea in his head, you can't blast it out with dynamite.
That's because I'm right most of the time.
Well, there's one thing you're forgetting, Mr. Creel. If we have an election, Jackson Devery won't like it. He's not going to just sit back and accept any threat to his power in this town. He'll try to put a stop to it. And if he can't do that, he'll do the next best thing. He'll run for mayor himself and try to get his relatives elected as the town council.
That's his right. You and the others will just have to out-campaign him.
Problem is, if it looks like they're fixing to lose, Devery and his bunch are liable to vote with bullets, not ballots.
The special was beef stew, and it was as good as the food they'd had here the day before. Bo and Scratch enjoyed the meal and mopped the last drops of stew from their bowls with pieces of sweet cornbread. Lucinda had to tend to the needs of other customers seated at the counter, but as the Texans finished their food, she came back over to them.
I've been thinking about what we talked about. I'll discuss it with the others and with my daughters, and if we're all in agreement, I'll run for mayor.
Could be dangerous, especially if you wind up running against Jackson Devery.
It was your idea, Mr. Creel. Are you trying to talk me out of it now?
No, ma'am. I still think you'd make a fine mayor. I just want to be sure you know what you're getting into.
I promise you, I know. It'll be worth a little risk if we can work together and make Mankiller a decent place to live.
There's one other thing you can talk to the business owners about, if you don't mind. If it's possible, Scratch and I could use a little advance on our wages. After that running at the livery stable, we're flat broke.
I'll see what I can do. We should be able to get a little money together. If you know it was the Deverys who attacked and robbed you, can't you arrest them for that?
Edgar Devery claims that we started the fight and that his son and the others just came in to help him. He says he doesn't know anything about what happened after we were dragged out of the barn.
What about Luke and Thad and the others?
We saw Luke and Thad on the street, but we didn't question him about what happened. We ought to do that just to see what they'll say.
Whatever it is, I reckon there's a good chance it's going to be a lie.
I wouldn't mind getting a look at this Jackson Devery, too. He's the leader of that bunch, so we're going to have to deal with him sooner or later.
You're going up to the Devery house?
I think it'd be a good idea.
Be careful. Those people are vicious.
We've stepped plumb into a den of rattlers before, ma'am. I reckon we'll be all right.
They left the cafe and turned toward the big house at the top of the hill.
When we were looking at the Devery place before, did you notice someone watching us from one of the second-story windows?
Can't say as I did. You see somebody up there?
I thought I did, but I'm not sure.
The shootout with Finn Murdoch and his friends was the talk of the town. Bo heard the low-voiced comments behind them as they passed knots of townspeople, but paid little attention to them. As he and Scratch continued toward the house, people began to follow them. It was obvious that they were heading for the old Devery place, and the citizens of Mankiller were curious to see what was going to happen.
Bo, appears we're drawing a crowd.
I know. I don't much like it either, but I'm not sure what we can do about it. Folks have a right to walk where they want to.
It wasn't just pedestrians following them. Men on horseback fell in with the followers, and a couple of wagons joined the procession, too.
Oh, now, dang it, it's starting to look like we're leading a parade.
Eh, if there's any gunplay, they don't want to miss it.
Well, you reckon there will be? Any gunplay, that is?
That depends on how hot-headed Jackson Devery is. I got a hunch the rest of his family will follow his lead.
They had almost reached the house. An unpainted picket fence enclosed the weed-grown yard in front of the place. The pickets had been nailed on carelessly, so some of them stood at angles, and the gate sagged loosely on its hinges. There was no walk inside, only a narrow path beaten down by the feet of those who lived here. Bo was reaching for the gate when Scratch stopped him.
Hold on. Look up yonder on the porch.
Bo looked and saw movement in the shadows cast by the porch roof. Two huge black dogs were lying there, their heads raised now as they stared at the Texans.
We set foot in there, them hounds are liable to come after us, and they got a mean look about them.
What else would you expect, considering who their masters are?
Hello in the house! Devery! Jackson Devery, come on out here! Devery! Come on out in the name of the law!
After another long, tense moment ticked by, the front door opened. The man who stepped out onto the porch was tall, broad-shouldered, a man still vital and fit despite his obvious age. Like the farmer he had once been, he wore overalls and a white shirt. His brown, leathery face was as sharp as the blade of an axe. Long white hair swept back in wings from his high forehead. Bushy side whiskers of the same showy shade crawled down onto his strong jaw. He was clean-shaven other than that, and had the piercing eyes and arrogant confidence of an Old Testament prophet.
I'm Jackson Devery. What do you want?
I'm Deputy Creel, Mr. Devery. This is Deputy Morton.
I know who you are. My brother came crawling up here begging me to let him take those horses back. I asked, what do you want?
We came to talk to your son Luke and your nephew Tad. Are they here?
What business is it of yours?
Law business! You better trot them out here, Devery!
By what authority? You can't just pin on a badge and call yourself a deputy. Who hired you?
Sheriff O'Brien swore us in. It was legal and proper.
I'm not sure anything that drunken fool does has any legal standing.
He's a duly elected sheriff. From what I've heard, you even backed him for the position.
Well, if he hired a couple of mossback saddle tramps for deputies, I'm not sure he's fit to hold office. Maybe we need to have ourselves another election around here.
Now, that's not a bad idea. Right now, though, O'Brien's a sheriff, we're legally appointed deputies, and we want to talk to Luke and Thad.
You don't want to obstruct justice now, do you, Mr. Devery?
Luke, Thad, get your sorry asses out here.
Bo and Scratch kept their hands on their guns, just in case Luke and Thad came out shooting. After a minute, the two younger men shuffled out onto the porch and cast baleful looks at the Texans. Neither of them appeared to be armed.
These here deputies want to talk to you, boys.
Why do we have to talk to them? It's just a couple of troublemaking drifters. They ain't real deputies.
They claim they are. Just humor them for now.
What the hell do you want?
All our money and gear back would be a real good start.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, mister.
The two of you and some of your relatives attacked us at the livery stable yesterday.
No, we didn't. We went in there to help my Uncle Edgar after you two saddle tramps started tearing up the place. That's what happened.
Now that's a damn lie! You jumped us from behind when we weren't doing anything except talking to Edgar!
You best watch who you're calling a liar, old man. The way I told it's the way it happened. And I got a half dozen witnesses to back it up.
The men who helped you try to kill us, you mean? The ones who beat us senseless and stole everything we had and dumped us in a damn mud hole for the hogs to eat?
If that really happened, we didn't have nothing to do with it. We just dragged you out of Uncle Edgar's barn and left you in the alley beside it. Man, there's a lot of shady characters in Mankiller these days. Ain't no telling who did those other things, if they really happened.
Yes, you made it plain you don't believe us.
And you can't prove a damn thing otherwise.
Why, you!
Take it easy. His word against ours, remember? We swore to uphold the law.
All right. For now.
If you boys happen to come across any of our belongings, we'd really appreciate it if they were returned.
Yeah, sure, we'll do that, won't we, Thad?
In the meantime, and this goes for you too, Mr. Devery, Deputy Morton and I want you all to know that we'll be helping Sheriff O'Brien enforce the law and keep the peace around here. If you have any problems, you come to us and let us handle them. Nobody takes the law into their own hands in Mankiller anymore.
Is that so? You know who founded this town, don't you, Deputy?
I do. That doesn't make any difference. The founder of a town isn't above the law.
For a long time, I was the only law and man killer.
Well, sir, those days are over.
Is there anything else you want?
Not right now.
Then get the hell away from my house. I'm done talking.
With that, Devery turned on his heel and stalked back into the house. Sneering and glowering at Bo and Scratch along the way, Luke and Thad went inside too.
Well, I didn't do us a damn bit of good.
Oh, I don't know. Gotta look at the old man. And we know now that Luke and Thad aren't gonna tell the truth about what happened yesterday.
Hell, we knew that anyway. You see those dogs on the porch?
Be hard to miss them.
They're damn near as big as horses.
Bull Mastiffs. They have hungry looks in their eyes, too. I'll bet they come after anybody who walked through that gate. But there are other ways in, if it comes to that. And who knows? Maybe we can make friends with them.
Scratch just looked doubtful about that idea. As they turned away from the old house, they saw that the crowd that had followed them up the street was still there, at least for the most part. Folks were lingering, as if they were waiting to see what the Texans would do.
You folks go on about your business now. There's nothing to see here.
Are you fellas really deputies?
Duly appointed and legally sworn.
And you're gonna stand up to the Deveries?
We're gonna enforce the law, keep the peace. That applies to the Deveries, same as it does to anyone else.
Have you met Sam Bradfield?
Move along, or we won't be the ones needing the Undertaker.
The crowd started to break up as Bo and Scratch strode through it, heading back down the hill. They went into the sheriff's office and found that Biscuits O'Brien had not returned. He was probably in one of the saloons guzzling down rotgut, and he might even be passed out somewhere. The Texans spent the rest of the afternoon organizing and cleaning up the office, which looked like it hadn't been swept out in months. There were two cells in the back. Bo took the mattresses from each bunk outside and gave them a good shaking to get rid of as much dust and as many bedbugs as he could. Scratch found a ratty broom in a closet and swept the place. Then they both tried to wipe the grime off the windows. By the time they finished, the office and jail didn't look exactly clean, but at least they weren't filthy anymore either. Late in the afternoon, a man with a mustache and graying pomaded hair parted in the middle came in.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Allow me to introduce myself, Harlan Green, owner of the Rocky Mountain Hotel. Mankiller's best, which doesn't mean quite as much when you realize that there are only two hotels in town.
Plus some flop houses, or so we've heard.
What can we do for you, Mr. Green?
Green drew a couple of keys from the pocket of his coat and held them out.
It's more of a matter of what I can do for you, gentlemen. Two rooms in the hotel for you to use free of charge, as long as you're working as deputies. I want to be part of the little group of concerned citizens that Mrs. Bonner has put together. And so does Jesse Hainsworth, who owns the other hotel in town. I'll be honest with you. I don't see how two men can clean up the lawless elements in this town and also stand up to Pa Devery and his clan. But if there's any chance of you being successful, I want to help as much as I can. Mankiller has the potential to grow into a fine town, but that'll never happen like it is now.
We're obliged to you, Mr. Green.
No, those aren't fancy rooms, and they're on the ground floor in the rear, as well as being rather small.
They'll be fine.
All we need's a place to lay our heads at night. Anyway, if Mankiller's as wild a place as we've heard it is, we may not be doing much sleeping for a while.
It's wild, all right. In spades.
A short time later, after Green had returned to the hotel, the Texans walked across the street to have supper at Lucinda Bonner's cafe. When they came in, all the tables were full, and so were the stools at the counter. But Lucinda's daughter, Callie, met them with a smile.
Ma told me to tell you if you came in to just go around back. She and Uncle Charlie are in the kitchen, and you can eat back there if you don't mind.
We don't mind at all.
Bo and Scratch did as Callie said, knocking on the back door they had gone through for the meeting earlier in the day.
Come in.
They stepped into an atmosphere of warmth and delicious aromas. The room had two stoves in it, and both of them were going, Lucinda working at one of them and her brother Charlie Ellis at the other.
Just sit down at the table. We'll have food ready in a minute.
Well, just like being back home.
And this way we don't take up valuable table or counter space.
A few minutes later, Lucinda brought them platters of thick steaks, fried potatoes, biscuits, and gravy. After she had put the food on the table in front of the appreciative Texans, she reached into a pocket of her apron, brought out a small roll of bills, and handed the money to Beau.
That's the best we can do in the way of an advance.
That'll be fine, ma'am. What with Mr. Green giving us places to sleep in the hotel, and the way you've been feeding us, I feel a little bad about taking wages from you folks as well.
Oh, don't feel bad about it, Mr. Creel.
Might as well call me Beau.
And I'm Scratch.
All right. Beau and Scratch. I like those names. But like I said, don't worry about taking the wages we'll pay you.
Why not?
Because if you stay in Mankiller for very long, I know good and well that you're going to earn every penny of them.
Despite Lucinda's pessimistic prediction, Beau and Scratch thoroughly enjoyed the meal, washing down the excellent food with several cups of coffee.
Our thanks to both of our chefs.
What are you going to do now?
Well, I suppose we'll go back over to the sheriff's office and make sure nobody's been looking for us. And I reckon we'll get started on evening rounds.
Where's Biscuits?
No idea.
You two are going to have to go it alone. You know that, don't you? You can't count on him for any help.
Never thought we could. But maybe we can be a good influence on him and he'll straighten up.
When the Texans returned, the sheriff's office was still empty, with no sign that Biscuits O'Brien had even been there since the Texans left. Scratch looked around the place with disgust written on his weather-beaten face.
You know, sooner or later, we're going to have to go look for that sorry excuse for a lawman.
I know. He's probably somewhere either soaking up more booze or passed out from it. And I suppose he could be in real trouble.
As if his words were a stage cue, the office door opened hurriedly, and a short man in work clothes stuck his head in.
Are you fellas deputies?
That's right.
Well, you'd better get down to Bella's pronto. It looks like all hell's gonna bust loose down there.
Now hold on a minute, What's Bella's and where is it?
Bella's? Well, it's the biggest whorehouse in town. It's a block over and two down on Grand Street.
Grand is the one that parallels Main on the north?
Yeah. You better hurry. Thad Devery's on a rampage and he's got some of his cousins there to back him up.
Your name wouldn't happen to be Devery too, would it?
Devery? Hell no. My name's Ernie Bond. I drive a freight wagon. I don't have anything to do with the Deverys other than the fact that I don't like them much.
Then lead the way.
Well, sure.
The little man took off trotting along the street. Beau and Scratch followed, their long legs allowing them to keep up with the smaller Ernie without much trouble. The word must have gotten around town that there was some sort of trouble developing over at Bella's, because quite a few men were hurrying in that direction besides Beau, Scratch, and Ernie Bond. The ones who were slower got out of the way of the lawmen. Ernie had said that Bella's was the biggest whorehouse in Mankiller. It lived up to that billing, Beau saw as they approached. The building took up half a block. Its windows were covered with thick curtains. The bottom half of the heavy front door featured elaborate woodworking, while the upper half had a pane of leaded glass surrounded by gold trim set into it. Painted on the glass in gold leaf was the simple legend, Bella's Place. That was the only explanation anybody in Mankiller needed. Everybody knew what went on here. Men clustered on the porch, pressing their faces to the glass as they tried to catch a glimpse through any tiny gaps in the curtains. More men were gathered in front of the door.
All right, everybody, step back. Let us through.
Some of the men started guiltily and got out of the way. Others were slower and more sullen about it, but they stepped aside after a moment.
All right, thanks for bringing us here. You don't have to go in.
Oh, I won't then. There's liable to be bullets flying around in there before it's over.
Beau hoped not. But he was prepared for anything as he opened the door, and he and Scratch stepped into the whorehouse. They had their hands on their guns as they entered. They found themselves in a foyer with a polished hardwood floor and fancy wallpaper. An oil lamp and a brass sconce lit the place up, revealing an arched entrance that led into a parlor to the left. Straight ahead was a wide staircase with a carved banister. Several women were clustered at the bottom of the stairs. The one in front was middle-aged, but still quite attractive, with bright red hair piled high on her head in an elaborate arrangement of curls. She wore a sea-green gown cut low enough to reveal the pale swells of her breasts. The women behind her on the stairs were all considerably younger and skimpier dressed, so Beau pegged the redhead as Bella and the others as the soiled doves who worked here.
Thank God you're here. They've gone loco. They're going to tear the whole place up.
No, ma'am, they won't. Not if we can do anything about it. Is that Thad Devery in there?
Yes, and his cousins Reuben and Simeon. George tried to settle them down when they got upset, but I'm afraid they've killed him.
You and your gals better get upstairs, ma'am.
You heard the gentleman, girls. Quick, get upstairs.
I'm sure smelling a trap.
Me too. We gotta go in there anyway.
The Texans stepped into the room with their guns drawn. Bo saw a man holding two of the legs of a chair he had just smashed against the floor. A glance around the room revealed furniture overturned and broken, paintings ripped down from the walls and torn to pieces, and shards of glass scattered across the floor where glasses had been shattered. It looked almost like a cyclone had hit the place. In addition to the man holding the busted chair, two more men were in the room. They had hold of a piano, and from the looks of it, they were about to try to tip it over. Bo recognized one of the men at the piano as Thad Devery. The other two shared a family resemblance. They would be Luke's brothers, Reuben and Simeon. He leveled his gun at them while Scratch covered the other man.
Hold it!
Drop those chair legs!
Go to hell! Nobody tells a Devery what to do!
You better listen to me, boy. I'll blow your legs right out from under you if I have to, and you will never walk right again!
Thad took his hands off the piano and stepped back from the instrument.
Do what he says, Sim. That old bastard's crazy enough to do it.
Glaring murderously at Scratch, Simeon Devery dropped the chair legs.
What in blazes is going on here?
Well, that's none of your business.
I reckon it is. You fellas are disturbing the peace if I ever saw it. This is wanton destruction of property, too. If you don't have a mighty good explanation for all this, I'd say you're facing some serious charges, Thad.
We had a right. We paid our money, and then the gal said no. A whore can't say no. It ain't fitting.
Yeah, it's Bella you ought to be threatening to arrest. She tried to cheat us. Said she wasn't gonna make the gal do what we wanted. And she wasn't gonna give us our money back, neither.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about one girl?
One whore, you mean.
And the three of you?
That's right. You got a problem with that, lawman?
I do, you damn degenerate. I ought to do the world a favor and just gun down the three of you here now.
Take it easy. We'll do this according to the law. The three of you take out your guns, nice and easy, and put them on the floor. Don't make any sudden moves, and don't try anything funny.
Reckon they already did that with the whore.
You got no right. Devers don't answer to the law. Devers are the law.
Not anymore. Not after today.
A husky figure started to rise into view from behind an overturned sofa. Bo glanced in that direction and saw a bald-headed black man with blood dripping down his face from an ugly cut on his forehead. He recalled Bella's comment about the Deveries killing somebody called George and figured this man was the house's bouncer and bodyguard. One of the troublemakers must have walloped him and knocked him out, and now he had come too. Taking his attention off Thad Devery was a mistake.
Watch it, Bo!
Bo saw the young man dragging his gun from its holster. Thad had barely cleared leather when Bo drilled Thad's gun arm, the bullet breaking the bone about halfway between elbow and shoulder. Thad dropped his revolver and grabbed his arm as he slumped against the piano. Bo switched his aim to Reuben while Scratch kept Simeon covered.
Either of you boys want to take cards in this game?
They shook their heads, eyes wide with shock as they looked at their cousin, who had slipped down to a sitting position on the floor. Thad rocked back and forth as he clutched his wounded arm.
You're damn lucky you ain't dead. Bo could have put that round right through your ticker.
Guns, gents, on the floor.
Reuben and Simeon hastened to follow the order this time. They put their irons on the floor and kicked them away.
All right, give your cousin a hand. We'll take him over to the jail and let the doctor have a look at him there.
You really arresting us? But we're Deveries.
Get used to it.
As the Texans ushered their prisoners out of the parlor at gunpoint, Bella rushed down the stairs.
Where's George? Is he alive?
The bouncer came out of the parlor behind Bo and Scratch, stumbling a little because he was still unsteady on his feet from the blow on the head.
I'm all right, Miss Bella.
Oh, good Lord. You're hurt. What'd they do to you?
One of them snuck up on me and walloped me with something. A gun barrel, I think.
Better have the doctor look at that cut. It might need some sewing up.
Well, Sawbones will be over at the jail for a while. I got a prisoner here with an arm that needs patching up.
One of you shot Thad Devery?
I did. He was fixing to shoot me at the time, so I figured it was best to stop him.
You done brought the wrath of that whole clan down on your head now, mister. They ain't never gonna forgive nor forget this.
Well, the Devries weren't exactly our amigos to start with. Now go on, get moving. You folks get on out the way now. Let us through.
And somebody please fetch a doctor and have him come up to the jail. We have a man here who needs medical attention.
Bo didn't add that the wounded prisoner was Thad Devery. Everyone could see that with their own eyes. Several men took off at a run, each evidently determined to be the first to reach the doctor and give him the summons. The Texans marched the prisoners over to Main Street and up to the sheriff's office and jail. Most of the crowd followed them, looking on this incident as part of the evening's entertainment. Not all of the bystanders came along. Bo was confident that some of them had already slipped away to pay a visit to the old house at the top of the hill and give Jackson Devery the shocking news that two of his sons and his nephew had been arrested. As they came into the office, Bo saw that Biscuits O'Brien had returned at last. The sheriff sat behind the desk. He was slumped forward with his head turned so that his cheek rested on the blotter. He didn't wake up or even budge as the five men tramped through the office and into the cell block.
Help Thad onto the bunk in that cell, and then you two take the other cell.
They did as he said, and when Thad was stretched out on the bunk in one cell and his cousins were in the other one, Scratch slammed the barred doors.
Good God, I reckon it'd take the angel Gabriel blowing the last trumpet to wake that varmint, and I ain't so sure about that. You figure he's got any actual blood left in him, Bo, or is rot gut the only thing flowing in his veins anymore?
I don't know, but when he does wake up, I'll bet he's surprised to find he's got some prisoners in his jail.
Yeah, especially these prisoners.
A few minutes later, a middle-aged man with a bristly white mustache came into the office.
I'm Dr. Jason Weathers. I hear you've got a wounded man here.
That's right. We saw you earlier today after that shootout, but nobody introduced us. I'm Bo Creel, and this is Scratch Morton.
Texan, by the sound of your voice.
Born, bred, and forever. Some things don't go away.
I'd better get to work. I hear my patient moaning back there. Is it true? You really shot Thad Devery and arrested him and two of his cousins?
It's the truth.
Well, all I can say is, it's about time.
Weathers gave them a curt nod and went into the cell block. Bo followed with the key ring that had been hanging on a nail in the wall behind the desk. He unlocked the cell where Thad lay on the bunk and then stepped back to let Weathers go in. Keeping his hand on his gun, Bo stood in the little hallway between the cells and watched as the doctor cleaned the wound. Thad carried on even more when Weathers set the broken bone. The doctor put splints in place on both sides of the arm and then wrapped it securely. By the time that was finished, Thad's head had fallen back on the bunk and he appeared to have passed out.
Good work, doctor. Fella called George down at Bella's place is in need of your services, too.
So I've heard. That's where I'm going now.
The two of them went out into the office. Bo closed the cell block door. Weathers paused beside the desk to look down at the still sleeping Biscuits and shake his head.
He never should have been made the sheriff. As long as he didn't have a regular job, he never had enough money to drink constantly like he does now. And I'm convinced that Jackson Devery slips him some extra just to make sure that he never sobers up and tries to actually enforce the law.
Well, that's changed now, ain't it?
Yes, for now. But if I was you, I'd be sure to make the acquaintance of
Sam Bradfield.
I see I'm not the only one who's given you that particular bit of advice. Good night, gentlemen. I hope you're still alive come morning.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that when Jackson Devery hears that his boys are behind bars, he may not wait until the sun comes up to declare open war on you two.
When the doctor was gone, Bo went over to the desk, gripped Biscuit's shoulder, and gave it a good hard shake.
Sheriff! Sheriff, wake up!
You have got a real chore in front of you, Bo, if you figure on waking him up anytime soon. What's wrong with just letting him sleep it off right where he is?
Nothing, I suppose. But if there's trouble, we'll have to worry about him getting hit by a stray bullet.
Well, there's a cot in the back room, right? Why don't we pick him up, put him back there? At least he'd be out of the way.
I reckon that's the best we can do. You want his feet or his head?
I'll take his feet. There's probably so much whiskey on his breath it'd make a man tipsy just to get too close to him.
They pulled the chair back and took hold of Biscuits. He was dead weight as they lifted him and carried him into the back room, which was so narrow there was room for the cot, but not much more, and lowered him onto it.
And that's our boss. That don't sound good.
We better see what it's all about.
Scratch went to the gun rack and took down one of the greeners.
Don't open that door yet, not until I load up this street sweeper.
He brought the shotgun to the desk, broke it open, and took shells from a drawer to load it.
That's a good idea.
Bo followed suit, lifting down one of the scatter guns for himself. When the Texans were well armed, Bo nodded to Scratch, who grasped the doorknob and turned it. Bo and Scratch stepped out onto the porch of the sheriff's office. A man stood with his back turned toward the jail, facing the crowd. His arms were raised as if he had been haranguing the onlookers. Now he lowered them and turned slowly. Bo had already recognized the man from his size and white hair as Jackson Devery, so he wasn't surprised to see the hatchet face of the Klan's patriarch. A quick scan of the crowd didn't reveal Luke or anyone else Bo recognized as a Devery. Their leader appeared to have come alone to the jail.
What do you want, Devery?
You got two of my boys and my nephew locked up in there.
That's right, we do.
Well, what the hell's wrong with you? Let them out!
You can't do that. They're under arrest for assault, destruction of property, and attempted murder.
Murder?
They pistol whipped the fellow who works in the establishment they tore up.
You mean a darkie who works in the damn whorehouse? Nobody cares about that!
The law does. For that matter, your nephew Thad drew on me, so that probably counts as attempted murder too.
I hear you shot him. Shot him like a dog.
Hey, well, Bo could have killed him easy. Thad's lucky to be alive considering the stunt he pulled, and that's the damn truth.
I don't care about any of that. You can't hold him. You can't put Devery's behind bars. Not in this town.
I am sorry. They're going to have to stay locked up until we figure out what to do about a trial.
There ain't going to be no trial because there ain't no judge. It'll be 6 months before the circuit judge comes through again, if he ever comes at all.
If that's the case, it sounds to me like what the people of Mankiller need to do is elect their own judge. So they won't have to wait for somebody to come in from outside in order to see justice done.
Hell yeah! We need our own judge!
Scratch caught on to what Bo was doing. He held up a hand for silence.
Yeah! And while you're electing a judge, you might as well go ahead and elect a mayor and a town council, too, and then this town can be run like a real town ought to be!
Shut up! Shut the hell up, all of you! There ain't gonna be no election, not for a judge, not for a town council, and not for no damn mayor. I founded this town. I own the land all up and down this valley. I run things around here, by God.
Not anymore, Devery.
You two bastards are gonna regret this, and so are the fools who put you up to it. I'll burn this town to the ground before I let anybody take it away from me.
Why would you do a stupid thing like that? You're making a fortune off the gold rush. It's unfair, but it's legal. Why can't you just sit back and collect your money?
You sons of bitches always look down your noses at me and my kin. I've seen it all my life. Think you're better than me and mine.
Mister, you don't know what you're talking about. Bo and me, we're just a couple of hombres who've been drifting most of our lives, never owning much but our horses and saddles and the clothes on our backs. We don't think we're better than anybody. You can damn well bet a hat on that.
All of you! All of you'll be sorry you crossed Jackson Devery, you hear me?
With that, Devery turned and stalked off along the boardwalk.
I understand why they feel the way they do about Devery, but those folks aren't making things any better.
Yeah, he's full of pride and plumb loco to start with, and that ain't a good combination. Mix that together with anger over his boys being locked up and fear that he's going to lose something he thought he could never lose.
It's liable to turn into something dangerous enough to blow up the whole town.
Now that they had prisoners locked up in the jail cells, Bo and Scratch knew they couldn't leave things in the hands of Biscuits O'Brien. Someone would have to stay there all night and guard the place.
All right, we'll take turns. One of us can stay, the other can go over to the hotel, get some sleep, and I'll flip you for the first shift.
With what? We don't have any coins, just those few bills Mrs. Bonner was able to give us as an advance.
Oh, yeah. Dadgummit. I don't even have my lucky silver dollar no more.
Your two-headed silver dollar, you mean?
Bo, are you accusing me of cheating in the past whenever we'd flip for something and us having been saddle parts for so long? I can't believe you don't trust me.
Go get some sleep. I'll take the first shift. I'm not that sleepy right now anyway.
Well, that's the way you want it.
Scratch tucked one of the scatter guns under his arm and then left the office. Bo turned the flame on the lamp a little lower, made sure all the blinds were down over the windows, and placed the other shotgun on the desk so it would be within easy reach when he sat down. The front door opened inward and had brackets on either side of it so that a bar could be lowered into them. Bo found the bar in the back room where Biscuits continued to snore. He put it into place, blocking the door. He checked the back door. It was locked but didn't have a bar. If he and Scratch were going to stay on here for very long, they could add a bar to make that door more secure, Bo thought. The front window could use some iron bars mounted in it, too. Satisfied that he had done what he could to prepare for trouble, Bo sat down behind the desk. Harlan Green was behind the desk in the lobby when Scratch walked in.
Deputy Morton? Where's Deputy Creel?
Oh, Bo's staying over at the jail for now. You might have heard tell about how we got some prisoners that need guarding tonight.
Thad, Reuben, and Simeon Devery. It's all anyone's been able to talk about. You and Deputy Creel are famous, at least in Mankiller.
Mm-hmm. Famous for being dumb enough to take on the Deverys, you mean?
Oh, not at all. Everyone I've talked to admires the two of you. Well, it's just that...
You ain't sure if we'll live long enough to do any real good, right?
Men have tried to oppose the Deverys before. None of them are still around.
Yeah, well, I know what you mean. Bo and me are pretty doggone stubborn, though. We've been around long enough to know a few things about taking care of ourselves.
I hope so. I certainly wish you the best. Is there anything I can do for you? Have a tub and some hot water brought up? Anything like that?
No. I'm just going to turn in and get some shut-eye for a while and go over and relieve Bo. I'll see you later.
Scratch headed for the hallway that ran toward the back of the hotel, right next to the stairway to the second floor. The rooms Green was providing for them were down that corridor, near the back door. Scratch found his room and used the key to let himself in. The glow from the dimly lit hallway showed him a small room containing a narrow bed, a rug on the floor beside it, and a night table with a lamp, a basin, and a pitcher of water on it. A porcelain thunder mug peeked out from under the bed. There was no chair, but Scratch didn't intend to do any entertaining here, only sleeping. A packet of lucifers lay on the table beside the lamp. He snapped one of them to life with his thumbnail and held the flame to the wick, then lowered the chimney and let the yellow glow fill the room. He closed the door and turned the key in the lock, then leaned the shotgun in a corner. The air in the room was a little stuffy, so Scratch pushed the curtain aside to raise the window a couple of inches. Glass shattered in front of Scratch's face. Scratch ducked away from the broken window, and the Colt came swiftly and smoothly from its holster. He triggered three fast shots at the spot where he had seen the muzzle flash. More shots thundered in the alley, sending Scratch diving to the floor. As he rolled over, he caught a glimpse of a shotgun's twin barrels being thrust through the window. Surging up onto his hands and knees, he dived behind the bed, which was the only cover in the room. Both loads of buckshot ripped into the bed, shredding the mattress and throwing chopped feathers into the air so that they filled the room and floated down like abnormally large snowflakes. With the feathers falling all around him, Scratch heaved up from behind the ruined bed and slammed two more shots through the window into the alley. That emptied his Colt, so he ducked down again and grabbed fresh cartridges from his pocket so he could start thumbing them into the cylinder. When he had the revolver reloaded, Scratch ventured a look and didn't see anything except the last of the feathers from the mattress drifting to the floor. He reached over and turned the lamp down until the flame guttered out. Darkness washed over the room. Crouched there in the shadows, Scratch waited to see if anybody was going to shoot at him again. No more flashes came from the alley, but maybe the bushwhacking scallywhooters were just biding their time.
Deputy Morton! Deputy Morton, are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. Best stay out of here, though, Mr. Green. Those varmints still could be out there.
Should I send for Deputy Creel?
No, just keep everybody away from this room. Might still be some lead flying around.
Since the bedspread was already ruined because the shotgun blast had blown a big hole in it, he pulled it off the bed and balled it up. Then Scratch reached up, found the lamp and the matches on the table, and brought them down. He dumped the oil from the lamp's reservoir onto the spread. Taking the oil-soaked ball of cloth with him, Scratch crawled around the bed and over to the window. Being careful not to get it too close to the bedspread, he lit another lucifer. He held the match to the spread, which burst into flame. Scratch heaved the blazing makeshift torch through the window into the alley and lunged up after it. He kicked out the last of the frame and leaned through the opening, confident that he had taken by surprise anybody who was still skulking out there. As he swept the Colt and his eyes from side to side, Scratch saw that the alley was deserted. He climbed through the window and dropped to the ground, then stomped out the burning bedspread. Men were clustered on the boardwalk at the mouth of the alley. Scratch walked up to them with the gun still in his hand, ready if he needed it. In the light that came through the windows of the buildings around them, he looked them over, pegging them as miners and townsmen. He didn't see anybody who looked like a Devery.
All right, settle down.
Well, what happened, deputy?
Nothing much. Some fellas took a few pot shots at me through the window of my hotel room, but they missed. Any of you folks see anybody running away from this alley?
He got head shakes and shrugged shoulders in response to the question. Either nobody had seen anything, or they were still scared to buck the Deveries. Of course, it was possible that the bushwhackers had fled the alley in the other direction. Harlan Green came out onto the hotel porch, carrying a rifle.
Deputy Morton, is that you?
Yeah. Anybody hurt in there? Lead was really flying around there for a minute.
Everyone's fine, as far as I know.
Good. Can't say the same for the wind in that room, though. It's busted all to pieces and, bed's tore up, too. It caught both barrels of a shotgun blast that was intended for me.
A window glass and a bed can be replaced. I'm not sure an honest lawman can.
Well, I'm sorry about the damage anyway. I reckon you could send Pa Devery a bill for it, but I got a hunch he wouldn't pay up.
You think he's responsible for what happened?
I'm pretty near sure of it.
I sent for a carpenter to board up that broken window. And, of course, I'll find another room for you.
Nah, I appreciate the offer, but I don't reckon it's necessary. I think I'm gonna get my gear and mosey back on over to the jail. Probably be better if both of us spend the nights there as long as we got prisoners locked up. Especially those particular prisoners.
You may be right. Good luck, deputy.
Much obliged.
Bo had barely gotten settled down in the office when he heard the gun thunder from somewhere not too far away. He was certain that the shots had come from the direction of the hotel, and Scratch had gone over there just a few minutes earlier. It was possible that somebody had been laying in wait to ambush him. Every instinct in his body had called out for him to go to the aid of his old friend, but at the same time, alarm bells rang loudly in his brain. Someone might have been waiting in the darkness for him to yank the door open and rush out of the office, making a perfect target of himself as he was silhouetted by the light behind him. And with him out of the way, Bo thought, it would be an easy matter for Jackson Devery to waltz in here and let his sons and nephew out of jail. Bo knew he couldn't allow that to happen, so he had been reluctantly forced to stay where he was. All he could do was pray that Scratch was all right. The shooting had stopped by now, Bo realized grimly. But what that meant, he didn't know.
Hey, Creel! You hear them shots? That was the other old fool dying! You know that, don't you, Creel? Why do you go and try and help him? Yeah, see what that gets you!
Bo strode across the room to the cell block door and opened it. Bo stormed into the cell block and swung the shotgun up, leveling the twin barrels as he aimed through the bars at Thad's face. Bo squinted over the barrels and slowly cocked both hammers on the weapon, one and then the other. A dark stain began to spread over the crotch of Thad's jeans.
Please, please don't!
Damn it, Deputy, no! You can't just shoot him down like a dog!
Yeah, I could. It'd be easy.
You'd never forgive yourself!
You stupid little chicken shit. I could blow your brains out and never lose a minute's sleep over it the rest of my life.
No!
Bo! Bo, it's me! Let me in!
Bo lowered the shotgun and carefully put the hammers back down.
You're a lucky man, Thad.
Bo walked out of the cell block, slammed the door behind him, and set the greener on the desk.
Hang on. I'll take the bar off the door. You all right?
Yeah, open up and I'll tell you about it.
Bo lifted the bar from its brackets and set it aside. He unlocked the door and swung it open. Scratch came in, not wasting any time in doing it. Bo shut the door, turned the key in the lock, and set the bar back in place.
I reckon you heard the shots?
I did. I knew you had to be right in the middle of them, too.
Oh, damn straight. There were bushwhackers waiting in the alley outside the window of my hotel room. They made a mess of the place. Reckon I made things hot enough for them that they gave up and lit a shuck.
Did you get a look at them?
Nope. Never saw anything except muzzle flashes.
Bound to have been the Devries, though.
Bound to. Unless it was friends of that fella Murdoch and those other hombres we had to shoot.
Yeah, I suppose it could have been something like that. My money's on the Devries, though.
Yeah, mine too. When you heard that shooting, your first impulse was to go charging out there, wasn't it?
Well, sure. Figured you were in trouble.
Uh-huh. And that old man Devries cunning enough to know that. You done the right thing by staying forted up here, Bo.
Yeah, I know that. But wouldn't have helped much if it had turned out you were dead.
But ain't. I'm hale and hearty as ever, so don't you lose no sleep over it.
I don't intend to. I reckon you're planning to stay here the rest of the night?
Yeah. Well, that sofa's probably a mite lumpy, but one of us can sleep there while the other stays awake and on guard. That sound like a good idea to you?
It does. And we'd better get used to it, too. We may have to keep it up until everything is settled, because I don't think we're going to be getting any help anytime soon.
The rest of the night passed quietly. With the impending war between the Texans and the Devries, it seemed that the rest of the troublemakers in the settlement were content to hold their hell-raising in abeyance, at least for the time being. Bo knew that wouldn't last, but he was grateful for any break that he and Scratch could get. Early the next morning, while Bo was brewing a pot of coffee, Biscuits O'Brien stumbled out of the back room holding his head. Scratch pulled out the chair at the desk and let Biscuits slump into it. The sheriff rested his elbows on the desk and ran his fingers through his tangled hair.
Damn it! Somebody make the room stop spinning!
The room's sitting still, Sheriff. I'm afraid that's your head.
I have the coffee ready in a minute if you'd like a cup.
I don't want any coffee. Damn it, I'm already too sober. Where's my bottle? Where's it gone?
Take it easy. It's still there.
Ah, here it is. Thank the Lord.
Scratch reached over and took the bottle out of his hand before Biscuits could pull the cork.
What the hell are you doing? Give me that back! Oh, I'm gonna be sick. Oh, hell, I'm gonna be sick. Help me into one of the cells. I gotta lay down.
You can't go in the cells. They're occupied.
Yeah, that's what we wanted to tell you. That's why you need to wait on that eye-opener. Your brain don't need to be muddled up right now.
Occupied? You mean we got prisoners locked up?
That's right.
I wondered why I woke up on that cot. The bunks in the cells are comfortabler.
That ain't a word.
Shut up. Give me that damn bottle. Who's the sheriff here?
You're the sheriff, Biscuits. That's why you need to think straight. Now, we have prisoners. Important prisoners.
Who?
Thad, Reuben, and Simeon Devery.
Deverys? You can't lock up any of the Devereys?
Too late. We already went and done it.
But why?
They went loco, or just crazy mean. Started wrecking one of the whorehouses. Bella's place.
That ain't no reason to arrest them. Pod Devery would have made good the damages.
Oh, really?
Well, no, probably not. He probably would have told Bella to go suck an egg.
That's not all. They pistol-whipped the man who works for Bella.
George? Well, good old George?
That's right.
Oh, Is he hurt bad?
I reckon he'll be all right. But what they did to him is assault and attempted murder. They could have killed him easy enough. And then Thad drew on me, which is attempted murder of a peace officer.
He didn't shoot you, did he?
Nope, because I shot him first.
Son of a bitch! You shot a Devery?
Yep.
Is he dead?
No, he's just got a busted wing. But he won't be wrecking a whorehouse or trying to shoot a lawman, or anybody else for that matter, anytime soon.
Oh, I didn't think things could get any worse, but I reckon they have. We got to let those boys go right now.
Can't do that, Sheriff. They are under arrest. Judge will have to rule before we can release them.
Judge? What judge? There ain't no judge around here but the circuit rider, and he won't be back for weeks.
There's going to be an election. Mankiller's going to elect a judge along with a mayor and a town council. Things are going to be run properly around here from now on.
I get it now. You're crazier than I am. Just a couple of crazy old coots who think they're real lawmen. There ain't no such thing in these parts. There's only the Deveries.
Not anymore. The decent people in town, and there are enough of them to make a difference, whether you believe that or not, have had enough. There may not be anything we can do right now about the Deveries collecting half of what everybody makes, but at least we can stop them from running roughshod over the whole settlement and everybody else in these parts.
And while we're putting a stop to the Devery shenanigans, we'll clean up the rest of the hell holes around here, too. Mankiller is going to be a safe place to live.
You two really have been chewing loco weed, haven't you?
I tell you something even more, Loco Biscuits. You're going to help us.
Oh, no. No, you're in this mess on your own. I don't want any part of it.
It's too late for that. You're the sheriff. Thad and those other boys were arrested on your watch. Jackson Devery's gonna blame you for what happened, too.
No!
Biscuits pawed at the badge pinned to his vest and finally succeeded in ripping it free. He threw it on the desk.
I won't be the sheriff anymore. I quit. I'm done. You hear me?
Scratch bent and picked up the badge. He rubbed it against his shirt to get the dust off.
I don't reckon you can do that, Biscuits. Leastways, not yet.
You're saying I can't quit my job?
There's no one in authority to accept your resignation. If you really want to quit, you'll have to wait until after the election. Then you can turn in your resignation to the town council.
Oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
Is there any chance you can stay sober? If there is, you can stay here and guard the prisoners while Scratch and I deal with bringing law and order to the rest of the town. You'll have to keep a clear head, though. The Deveries are liable to try some tricks.
Stay sober?
That's right. If you can do that, Biscuits, you got a chance to be a real lawman, whether you think that's possible or not.
I don't know. I could sure use a drink to help me think.
If you gonna help us out, Biscuits, you have taken your last drink for a while.
No. Oh, God. No, I can't. I just can't.
Who's there?
It's Lucinda Bonner. Harlan Green told me that you're living in there now, so I took the liberty of bringing your breakfast over to you. I have flapjacks and bacon and scrambled eggs and...
Biscuits bolted out of the chair. He flung himself at the door to the back room and disappeared in there. Bo closed the door, muffling the noises from within.
Hope he found a bucket in time.
Bo unlocked the front door and opened it for Mrs. Bonner so she could carry a large tray filled with covered plates into the office.
Goodness gracious! What was that racket?
Nothing for you to worry about, ma'am. Sheriff O'Brien's just, not very hungry right now.
But that's all right. More for us that way.